So you went to Barrow in 1948 and you were working for Artie Contractors.
That's right.
And do you remember, list some of the places that you went. You worked in Barrow for about 18 months and then you were sent out to different drill sites where you did carpenter work.
Yes.
Erecting buildings or tearing them down or...
Yes.
Remodeling. I was
at a number of those sites. Oh, I've been Fish Creek, East of Malik, Pogrick, Omiat, Wolf Creek.
Gubik?
I never got out to Gubik. I've flown over it. I think I landed there once, but never worked there.
When was the last time you were up on the North Slope?
The last time I was on the North Slope, I went up on a temporary assignment for the Dew Line in 59.
Mm-hmm.
There about 2 months.
Where'd you go there then?
I don't remember all the locations.
Oh, you just went a lot of different places.
My work took me up and down the Arctic coast there. Oh, I was at Wainwright and Point Lay, I guess.
Different dew line sites.
Different dew line sites all along the coast. From Barrow on down, almost to, I didn't get down quite to Cape Lisburn, but that's about the only location on that Arctic coast that I haven't been to.
Well, were you there in August of 1950 in Barrow?
August of 1950, I was at Topogrick.
Because that's when I was married, in August 1950, at Barrow.
August of 50?
1950.
I was there at the time of your wedding. Maybe it was a little later that I went out.
Yeah. August 17th. Next year is going to be our 25th wedding anniversary, and I told my husband, he spends a lot of time at Barrow. He does a lot of consulting work for the NPR4. They're going to do some more drilling up there.
Oh.
And he's been doing a lot of work. Planning, logistics, and engineering. And so I told him next year, August of next year, we're going to have a big party up there.
I was at East of Malik in 50, I guess, because I should have been there for the ship expedition, and somehow they slipped up and didn't call me back in for it, and I missed the ship expedition in 50.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was out at East of Malik. That was one of the places I went out on floats and came out on skis.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the trip that October the 13th, Friday the 13th of October of 50 was the day that my plane was lost up there. And you remember when they were searching for it?
Yeah.
Well.
Was it a whiteout or?
No.
Did it get foggy, or what caused it?
Well, we had a young pilot that he was the fellow that had the contract for the bush flying up there. It was his son. And he was really too young and too inexperienced for the Arctic.
Mm-hmm.
And he just got off course somehow Well, the compass was off.
I remember one time Jim was saying it was maybe that was the flight. Anyway, there were a lot of carpenter's tools in the plane and the compass got off.
No, my tools, they didn't. It was a small plane and I couldn't put my toolbox on.
Yeah, well, I wasn't accusing you of that, but anyway, they said the compass did get off.
Could happen, but my toolbox, we had to leave it sitting alongside of this little lake where I boarded the plane.
Mm-hmm.
And
but you got lost. Where did they finally find you?
Well, we were about 25, 26 miles out of Wainwright when they finally found us.
You ran out of gas?
We were running low on gas, and this young pilot admitted he was lost. And he was just circling around out there, and I couldn't see where anything was gained by staying up there when we were low on gas and the sun was going down. And I suggested we pick out a landing, a lake that we could land on and get down while we're still under control.
Yeah.
So we sat there from Friday afternoon till Monday noon.
Well, was this in October?
Yes, Friday the 13th day of October that we went.
So it wasn't really bitterly cold.
No, it was, I'd say perhaps 10 above zero, something like
did
that.
Did you have any survival gear with you?
We had sea rations.
Sleeping bags?
Well, we had our sleeping bags, but we got those wet the first night sleeping in the snow, and they weren't much good to us after that. We had emergency gear like rifle, shotgun, fishing tackle.
Sea rations.
I wouldn't want to make a regular diet of those, but they tasted good out there.
Yeah, I ate some sea rations during the flood. Our house is on the hill, but I worked for the paper at the time, and I came downtown. I never got home for 4 days. For the first couple of days, all we had was sea rations. And we were really delighted to have them.
Well, I was at home all alone. I don't remember yet how many days I was in that house alone, couldn't get out, but I had plenty of food.
Yeah. Well, you were down 3 days, and did another bush plane find you? Or?
Well, there was a C-46 that finally located us, and they were flying single engine planes during the day with two Eskimos on the plane for observers, and at night they're flying the C-46s with volunteers sitting in the windows observing.
Did they find you at night?
Yes, they found us at night.
You set off a flare, or?
Well, by that time we were taking turns of sitting in the plane and sleeping and taking turns. One man always out watching, listening for planes, and I saw a light in the air that I wasn't sure. By that time I was getting so tired that I wasn't sure whether I was imagining it or not, and I woke the pilot up and asked him to take a look, and he said it was a light, so I lit a flare, and within a minute, they had spotted our flare and flew over. And
they didn't land with the C-46.
No, they didn't try to land. They just
pinpointed you.
Notified the CAA at Barrow. Yes, and then CAA called us and said that they were going to fly over. We were seen, and they were going to fly over, and then they would turn and come back over, and the second flight over would be a direct course to the village of Wainwright, just so if anything happened that they didn't get to us, we'd know where
Wainwright was.
Yes, yeah. The direction to Wainwright. And then they told us just to wait, somebody would be in to help us the next day. So they come in the next day and with another plane, brought gasoline.
Oh, food?
Yeah, they brought more sea rations.
More sea rations? So what'd you eat when you got back to camp? Have a steak?
Yes, they had steak, I think, when we got back to Barrow. That got in there just about lunchtime.
Yeah. I bet you were hungry after that one.
Yeah.
Well, I've flown a lot in small planes, but I've never had any problems.
That was the only time I did.
And that was just human error, too. That was wise, though, to sit down and wait.
Oh, yes, but the compass was definitely off.
Mm-hmm.
And some human error, too.
Well, the pilots who fly up there a lot can look at a lake and know right where they are.
Yes, but
were to you and me, the lakes all look alike. But those who really know the country can just look down and see a lake or a stream, and they can pretty well tell where they are.
Well, they have their problems too when the wind changes and the snow drifts over those lakes.
Mm-hmm.
That bothers a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of problems to flying in the Arctic.
Well, do you mind if I look at some of your pictures in here?
Go right ahead.
Maybe you could tell me a little bit about some of the people in them. There's some Eskimos there that I think that's at Barter Island.
This is Barter Island. This one here is Fred Gordon. He's a son one of the original white settlers in Barrow. There was at that time Gordon, Levitt, Hobson, and Brower.
Mm-hmm.
That first settled there. That's
the white men who settled.
Yes, of the white men. That's his son, Gordon's son. But he was living on Barter Island when I took that picture.
I see.
In 48. And this fella right here is Herman Rexford.
Well, he's still at Barter.
He's still at Barter, and he's a preacher there, I guess.
Oh, yeah?
In the Eskimo Church.
Yeah, I'll
be doing. And these others, now I've forgotten their names, but occasionally I meet an Eskimo on the street and he'll speak to me, call me my name. And
but these are all at Barter.
Barter. And we were just over there at Barter that year, rebuilding, doing some remodeling and rebuilding of some of those
mm-hmm.
Quonset huts that had been built there on that permafrost and settled down.
Yeah.
And we had to rebuild them. And we were only there about a month. That was on my first trip to the Arctic. And talking about dog sleds, here was the first dog teams I ever saw was that year at
Barter Island.
At Barter Island.
Now, did you say that was in 48?
48.
48, yeah.
And we were there about 30 days and then returned to Barrow.
How'd you get there from Barrow?
We went on a C-46.
So and the runway must have been...
Now you can see there wasn't much of a village there at that time. A lot of those, some of those buildings were just built with old driftwood. And that was long before the dew line was built.
And what are these?
Whale bone that was laying out there. And if you look, you can see that LST.
Yeah, right, that wrecked LST.
That old LST there.
Yeah.
These bones were laying out there on the beach in front of that.
Yeah, that looks like a vertebra.
It is. And this bone, I don't know what part of the whale that came from.
Well,
it's a big one.
That's a big one. A dog would chew on that all his lifetime. And are these Eskimo boats?
No, those boats were bringing the winter supply, food and fuel, oil and such, kerosene, like for the little Eskimo village on Barter Island. They were from Barrow.
Oh, I see, freight boats from Barrow.
Yes, and I imagine I think the boats belong to Brower. Tom Brower.
Yeah, he used to run freight routes or runs over there.
And
when I lived at Barrow, but I don't know who does it now.
Now you can see some of the
good old Quonsets.
Old Quonsets that we were rebuilding.
I don't know what the United States would have done in World War II without Quonset huts.
No, I don't either.
I made a trip out to the Aleutians last January, and they had quite a lot of military installations out there, and there are Quonset huts all over the place, rusting away.
If you notice ever, there's just a weather station at Barter Island at that time, manned by the Army. They all had a sense of humor. Here the mess hall was called Ulster Gulch.
Ulster Gulch.
And
and that the church?
Bardar Island in Sanitarium. That was the first aid station.
Oh, and is it Bardar Island Light and Power Company?
The producers of Northern Lights. The post exchange here was
Polar Bear Club.
Yeah, they called it Polar Bear Club. There I am standing in front of it.
Yeah.
Now here, this reindeer camp over near Topogric, and out of about 50 miles out of Point Barrow.
Whose camp was that, do you know?
Well, I can't pronounce that name. We were talking, you mentioned the name earlier.
Not Browers.
No. It was, I know, Reuben and Edith's son.
You mentioned. Tegosiak.
Tegosiak.
Yeah, Tegosiak. Their
son, Stephen, and his wife.
We're there. Is that their dog team?
That's their dog team, yes.
Is that caribou in those pictures?
A reindeer.
Reindeer.
That's out.
At the reindeer camp.
At that reindeer camp.
Yeah, I see.
That was in 1950.
That's you and Howard Hine.
That's Howard, yes.
Two little Eskimo children.
We were out at the, on the point at some Eskimos hunting camp when that was taken.
Was at Barrow, out of Barrow.
Yes. That's Guy Okakook's family and his home at Barrow.
Wow, he has a big family.
Well, there might have been some neighbor's children in there then, because I was loaded down with candy.
Yeah, that's likely. Do you know who this couple is?
Well, that I don't know why that's in the Barrow pictures, but that's the Fred Gordon.
From Barter.
Yes, and some of his family. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, his wife was here about 2 years ago. She fell off of a sled. It was pulled by a snowmobile out on a hunting trip up in the Arctic, and they didn't find her for 2 days. She was frozen to death, of course, when they found her.
There's the old C-46. This must be at Barrow, right?
Yes, it
looks
this
like
is
Browers.
Browers store, the old Cape Smith Whaling and Trading Company. The Brower School, the Barrow School, that was in 1949, and the village of Barrow, in 1949.
More of the village.
That was in 1951, that was
Dave Brower's house.
At the post office.
Yeah,
right in there.
I remember that. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was right over in Browerville.
I wouldn't be surprised. You remember Red
Croslin?
Croslin. I think that's his plane there.
Yeah,
at Barrow.
I'll be darned. Yeah, in fact, I saw him 2 years ago.
Yeah, I was just wondering today what it ever became of him.
He went back to. He left in 49, I think. And he went back to school and got his degree in mining engineering, and he's been mining ever since.
Oh.
And he had been in Moab, Utah then.
Moab, Utah.
When I saw him, and do you remember Chuck Lawson?
Gosh, yeah, sure.
Well, when I was back in the East the summer of 72, and on my way back to Alaska, I stopped in Chicago suburbs to see Lawson's. Same time I stopped there, Red Croslin and his wife stopped.
Oh.
So we had a real good old gab fest there till about 4 o'clock in the morning.
I imagine so.
Yeah, we stayed up till about 4 o'clock in the morning. And they had about 6 children, mostly all grown now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure where he is now. I think he might still be in Utah. What's that? That's a barrel or Bettles?
No, that was the Skull Cliff.
Skull Cliff. Oh, I remember Skull Cliff.
The old Lorraine station.
Yeah, right. They had that real tall tower there.
Yep.
The only obstacle to aviation in the Arctic is that big tall tower.
Because I knew the man that went up there and blasted it down.
Did you?
Yeah. That was, they dynamited it.
Yeah.
I don't know, we went over there for something one day on a LVT. That was, these pictures were taken during the
Whaling
Festival at Barrow.
Nuchilawaya. Yeah, I've been to some of those. Well, these are good blanket toss pictures.
I have some of those on slides, too. There's Tom Brower's house before it was ever painted.
Well, they sure got a big house now.
There at me, passing out chewing gum.
Yeah.
Those girls are setting up on that boat.
There you are holding a little Eskimo kid again.
I showed this to Steve Hobson, this album, Steve Hobson and his wife down in Hawaii. And they found a lot of pictures in here that they recognized. They didn't know that such a picture was in existence.
Yeah. Oh, I bet they had a good time looking at that.
And of all the Aikens and the Arctics, why, here's the grandmother of all.
How do you suppose they got that name up there? Now, she was a grandmother then, so that had to be a pretty early...
Well, now, Sam Hobson and they stayed at the same apartment complex where I stayed in Hawaii, and this, well, they were downstairs in the same building.
Mm-hmm.
And this Japanese that owned the apartments, she was curious and never seen an Eskimo before. And she was asking Hobson, and she asked him how come he had a English name.
Yeah.
Well, he started to explain to her and about his father.
Was a whaler?
Yes, up there in the early days. And I said, why, Miss Hoda, I said, there's lots of Eskimos up there by the name of Aiken. And she was surprised at that. And Sammy then went on and explained it to her. And according to him, this Aiken came in there at the same time Brower.
Charlie Brower did?
Yes, and the others. And he married this Eskimo. They had one son, Johnny Aiken,
mm-hmm.
was killed in an accident up there before I went to the Arctics. But he had several children that all married Eskimos.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now they're pretty near full-blood Eskimos, most of them.
Yeah.
But they still use it. The name Aiken.
Yeah, they still go by the name Aiken. Now that sod house, that was near the Presbyterian Church,
uh-huh.
wasn't it? And I think they used to put ice in that.
I imagine that was just used for storage.
Yeah, they used to, in the summertime, I know they'd have ice in
uh-huh.
that. I remember, it's gone
I know
now.
There was nobody living in sod huts up there then. But
no, that's gone now.
Oh, I imagine so. I don't imagine I'd know Barrow if I'd see it.
No. If you haven't been up there since 59.
I'd like to make another trip up.
Well, you know, I was talking to some members of the American Association of Retired People. Senior Citizens Group. They're going to make a trip up to Prudhoe Bay. Maybe this week.
Yeah. I've never been
right... Every once in a while, they just get together and go someplace.
I've never been to Prudhoe Bay, but I guess I've flown over it many times.
Yeah, you've flown over it. If you went to Barter Island, you flew over it lots of times.
Well, I've been on that trip many times. But it all looks alike up there for...
Well, it's beginning to look like a city up there now.
If people down in the South 48 could understand how large that North Slope is,
yeah.
they wouldn't worry about a little pipeline running across it.
What's that tent there, this picture?
That was at their...
Duck camp?
Yes, if you remember, they all moved up on the point in the summertime to shoot ducks, lived in tents. Well, that's what they called their shooting station.
This must be an old sod igloo.
The original village was at the point, you know, about 9 miles north of where it is mm-hmm. now. Well, that's the remains of the old sod huts that were there.
Now, these big whale bones, they must have used those for sealing or reinforcing.
They used them, whale bones, for, like we would, for timbers, framing.
Mm-hmm.
And they also were using whale bones as walkways between the huts.
Is that right?
Yes. And that's a cemetery there, but they must have buried them very, very shallow, because there's a skull laying right in. The erosion there has uncovered some of them. The
yeah,
bones.
Sometimes they have some pretty severe storms that just flow right over that point area, so it would be easy to disrupt a grave.
Howard Hine and I spent many, many hours driving around taking pictures up there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they here in 1951, the people are still living in these odd huts at Point Hope.
Mm-hmm.
I know
they're still living in
Lady Fran took that picture and was over there and gave it to me.
Yeah, I think there's some families still living in sod houses there.
In fact, I guess she had my camera over there to take that picture. Now, here's one of those grave markers up on the point. It's dated December the 13th, 1916.
Mm-hmm.
We're still burying there at that late, anyhow.
Oh, equipment.
That, I think, was South Barrel 1 drill rig.
Mm-hmm.
That was right just outside the camp, you know.
Yeah.
Sure. In fact, yes, you can see it down
the
street
camp.
Of the camp there.
Now, that's an LVT, isn't it?
Yes, that's amphibious.
I've got some slides of some of these things, some of these very things that you've got pictures of.
Well, I guess I have some.
I haven't looked at them for so long. I should just get them out sometime and have a slide session.
These pictures here were taken in the main camp at Barrow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a seismograph outfit they had. They were making some tests out there in the ocean in the summertime. These are on barges.
Mm-hmm. Alaska Airlines, I remember when they ran the... there's my dog picture.
Yeah, that's your dog team.
Yeah, part of it. Well, I guess that's all I had was three dogs.
I remember.
Yeah, I used to run them over at the village. It was the only transportation I had. Unless
still,
I
do you still have your dog sled?
No.
No?
Uh-uh.
I was working at Dumiat when this fella was building that sled for you. He'd work at nights out in the shop.
Oh, that was a nice sled.
Oh, I'll say it was.
That was a beautiful.
Morris Helderbrake.
Yeah, I was trying to remember the name.
Just the name Morris just came to
Morris
me.
Morris Helderbrake.
He's a fine fellow.
What are these?
This is a
barrel. North Pole Refrigeration Service.
Stove shop was called the North Pole Terrifiers. And there we was just starting to build that laundrette barrel.
Oh, yeah.
Steaming holes
steaming
for the foundation.
Holes, yeah.
The old laboratory.
Mm-hmm. Arctic test section. Boy, they have a beautiful laboratory up there now.
I'd like to see that.
They built a brand new building. They even have flush toilets in it. Running water.
Oh, yeah.
And automatic washers and dryers. Just unbelievable, you know, when you think back to the days when we lived in these Quonsets.
I lived in that Quonset Hut 264 there for 8 months. And then finally moved down to 247.
It just doesn't, you know,
There's one of their cat trains. They're pulling those Quonset huts on sleds out to some drill site to set up a new camp. We used to build those 20 by 48 Quonset huts in the carpenter shop and then load them on those big sleds and then
haul
them out.
T3.
The original hangar.
That got a lot of use.
Yeah.
These are good ice pictures.
I helped build that hangar there in 48.
That's at Barrow.
Yeah, it's at Barrow.
Yeah, I think it's still in use. They have another hangar, but I'm not sure about that. I haven't really looked to be check on that. Oh, there's some good Arctic ice pictures in the dog team.
Yes, that was. We hiked out there and taking pictures of the ice ridges, pressure ridges.
I was at Barrow in May of this year, and I went out to a whale camp. There's not a dog team left in Barrow. And somebody, I don't really believe this, but the tour guide there told us, we didn't go on a tour, but we were talking to this fellow. He said they even had to import an Alaska Husky from Nome or Kotzebue so they could show them to the tourists.
I don't know.
But to go out to the whale camps, they use snow machines now.
Sure.
And they haul the sleds behind them. No dog teams at all.
No. The last dog team I ever heard of that in Nome belonged to Alaska Airlines just for a tourist attraction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's some dogs at Barrow, but it's surprising to see little French poodles or big, good dogs. And they even keep them chained now because they're not just mutts. They're good dogs, so they try to keep them chained.
That's myself out with a weasel. I don't know where that was taken. That was a ship expedition in 1949.
Yeah. August of 49. Well, they should have their ship expedition coming in there right about now. There are the ships way out in the, you can see them way out in
yeah.
the water.
And those Eskimos, I was in charge of the unloading there in one of those beaches.
Mm-hmm.
And when we weren't busy and didn't have a barge in to unload, those Eskimos were out there dipping those smelt or candlefish.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, that's what they have, nets.
I drove up to the warehouse and got the burlap bags for them. And, I don't know how many bags of those they caught there.
Yeah, when they run, they run. This must be when you landed on the ice, huh?
That was when we were lost. In 1950, Friday the 13th of October, 1950. That was our camp. Right out in the open on the ice.
You were lucky to get found.
Now that was cat train somewhere, I don't know where. Kitchen and bunkhouses.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember where I took that. Now if you notice these sleds here with the Quonset hut on it, Quonset hut on the sled, see those oil drums, mm-hmm. empty oil drums underneath? There was to float when they come to a stream during the summer months. There I am standing on top of one of those old side houses, what was left of them up on the
point.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how I happen to have two of them in there. Inside of her bunkhouses at night.
Yeah.
And here's the one I was telling you about. The
feeling no pain.
The cook, that was at Umiat, and the cook, he was wanting a relief cook there so he could go on a vacation. And he was watching all the mails for a letter from Molson.
Uh-huh.
Tell him when he'd be relieved. Well, I had that picture I'd taken of him. He knew nothing about it. And so I got the clerk over and handled the mail to address an envelope to him from Barrow, just the way Molson would have addressed it, the Umiat Kitchen, board mail. And I put that picture in and the negative and slipped it in the mail for him, and he didn't know when he got it. I saw him open it. Oh, he was really puzzled. Now he thought Molson had mailed that picture to him to show him that he knew what was going on down
well,
there.
Is he sleeping there or was he drunk?
He was absolutely drunk.
Lying on the floor by the kitchen stove.
I happened to be there that day. We were returning from Fairbanks to Barrow and landed to let off some freight at Umiat.
Uh-huh.
They're taking off with a C-46, and just as we coming up off the runway, the right-hand engine conked out on us.
Uh-uh.
We just barely missed a crash. And they come back and landed right where we took off from. And we went up to the camp. And possibly some of a bunch, it was about 13 of us on the plane. And I wouldn't doubt what some of them had bottles.
Oh, yeah.
And the cook got drunk down behind the counter there. And I went in and took a picture of him laying there on the floor. He didn't know anything about it. He found out, he figured it out later who yeah. it was, that it was me that had pulled it on
yeah.
him.
Well, did he get his relief so he could go to town?
Oh, he got his relief. He was going on a vacation back in Illinois.
Oh, I see.
And now that's at Cape Simpson. That rig was built, that oil rig was built on sled runners and mm-hmm. towed from Barrow out there.
Yeah, right.
I went out there to help put it, set things up. Jim was out there that mm-hmm. day when we got out there. And talk about things being little rough in the camps. Somebody made a mistake and shipped all of our food went to another camp.
Oh dear.
And our mattresses went to another camp. I had an apple that day for lunch, but they got food in there in time to feed us that night.
Mm.
But we had to sleep on cots without any mattresses that night.
Gosh.
Things got a little rough yeah. at times there in those days.
Yeah, they sure did. That happened now, everybody go on strike probably.
Oh, That reminds me, we took such things as that, like getting lost or anything, or having to sleep without a mattress out mm-hmm. there in a Quonset hut. That was, we considered just part of the day's work.
Yeah.
But Evan, or Sammy Hobson, was talking when he visited me in Hawaii, he said that, he says the old Eskimos sat around and talk up at Barrow in the village, and they talk about and compare us with the people that come up there to work nowadays. And he says they call it the old days. They'd say, yeah. Those men that were up here in the old days, they were tough.
Yeah.
They'd take care of themselves. Yeah. Now they get a bunch up there that they have to take them to the hand, lead them around, keep them from getting lost.
Wipe their noses.
Yeah. He says that they still remember a lot of our names.
Oh, yeah.
There. And he said they'll sit around and talk about it. And he said they talk yet about that time that I was lost up there. He says, Sam, he said, why, you fellas, he said, they told you there was something I wanted to build out somewhere in the tundra, he said.
You went and built it.
He says, you fellas went out there and built it.
Yeah.
And when you come back, the job was done. He says, they don't get that kind of man up there anymore.
Yeah.
Well, that's about all of those.
Well, what was Sam Hobson doing in Hawaii? Just vacationing?
Just vacationing. He's been working for Ween for the last 20 years, close to 20 years.
Yeah.
He and his wife and four children came down there and spent a week.
Holy darn. They like it?
Oh, they've been there before. Sammy and his wife had. The children never been there. I didn't feel well enough to get out much. And they had my car to drive all the time they were there, and they stayed in the same apartment house that I did. Now there, talk about different transportations up there. That's that DC-3
on
skis.
Skis, yeah.
I rode that many a time.
Yeah.
Bob Schulten.
Bob Schulten, yeah.
Piloted that.
Yeah.
And that was out at, I believe this was at Fish Creek, where he landed that day. Yes, I know it was, because I went out with a crew of Eskimos to take the Fish Creek camp down and took it down, bundled everything up, loaded on a cat train to go somewhere else.
Yeah, moving on.
Moving on to another site. And that was our bunkhouse, cat train bunkhouse, and a kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a good job. This year we was putting the roof on a rig house out at the Pogrick. There's hell to break right there.
Yeah.
Build your dog sled.
Yeah.
That's him. I guess that.
Oh, I'm glad you have these pictures. Those are.
Seems to me like there's other pictures that should be here. I've got a lot of them over there in the dresser drawer. I don't know what I have, do have.
Here, I'll take that for you.
Oh, that's all. I just lay it right over here.
Well, do you miss those days up there in the Quonset huts?
Do I miss them? As I said earlier in the day, there was times when it was rough up there.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't take $1 million for my experiences up there, and I'd love to go back again.
That'd be nice if you could go back to Barrow. It's so different up there.
Well, I'd love to go back and work up in that slope again. I liked it.
Well, is there any chance that you could go up?
No. Oh, I expect someday to go up just for
a trip.
Just a trip to see barrel again. But no chance that I could ever work again.
Well, how do you like it here at the Pioneer Home? Seems like a pretty nice place to be.
Well, it's the best thing ever happened to me was getting in here.
Well, that's a good thing to hear. And some people don't want to come here, but I think it's a wonderful place.
I can't complain at all. I have nothing to complain about this home. And I feel it's an honor to be allowed to live here.
Now, I see you downtown often. You can go downtown anytime you want to, can't you?
I never was so free and independent in my life as I am now.
Yeah. You don't have to worry about meals or...
Well, that's one thing that's helped me with my ailment. I don't need any strain or worry. Mm-hmm. And here, I don't have it.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful.
I pay my rent once a month here, and the nursing department tell me that they're to do the worrying, not me.
Well, good. They have some wonderful people working here.
Yes. Some wonderful
really
people.
Understanding people. I noticed with, not you, but with some of the people here who do have physical problems or mental problems, some of the guests here are quite elderly or senile, you know, and they're so gentle with them and so understanding. It just is real gratifying to see that.
It's not everybody could hold a job of that kind.
I know.
It takes a certain type of person, and they have them here.
Yeah.
I've never heard anybody speak cross to a guest.
Neither have I. And I've been out here
and lots of times I think they should, but they don't. Some people can get out of line.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you have any activities outside the Pioneer Home? Do you belong to anything in town that you participate in?
No, I don't.
Some, I know some here go down and play bingo or pinochle.
No,
or
I
go to lunch and belong to organizations.
I don't care much about it because I get with my nerves the way they are, I get tired too quick. And lots of times just being in a crowd will tire me.
Right.
And
Well, your schedule here, do you usually stay up till 11 or midnight every night? And
I seldom go to bed before 11, 11:30, 12 o'clock.
And then you, do you usually get up for breakfast?
I haven't missed yet, except in 1 week that I was sick and they brought my breakfast to me.
Oh.
No, breakfast is my main meal. I never miss that.
Well, since the July 10th, I think, they had the grand opening, or the official opening of the new wing, and Stella, the manager here, wrote me a note and asked me if I would come and get some pictures and do some coverage, but I was out of town, so I wrote her a note back and told her I regretted that I couldn't do it. But did they have a big ceremony of any kind of a ceremony?
Oh, yes. They had a ribbon cutting ceremony here, and I get you one of the programs right here.
Oh,
and here is
it.
This is a drawing for the. Oh, here's it. Beginning of the program.
Oh, Master of Ceremonies William Cashin, past president of Igloo number 8. Invocation by Reverend George E. Carroll, Sacred Heart Cathedral. Sweet Adeline's singing This Is My Country. Stella Muckenthaler comments. Oh, governor. Was the governor here?
Oh, yes.
Oh, wonderful. And the Alaska Flag Song by the Sweet Adelines. Well, that sounds like a good...
You mentioned the governor being here. I'll just interrupt there and tell you that he mentioned my name and his speech and give a little thanks for what I had done here. And
wonderful. I noticed you have a picture of Governor Egan up there. Is he a friend? Is he a personal friend of yours?
Well, he said, when he mentioned it, he said, a longtime friend of his.
Yeah, well, that's good.
He was referring to the flowers and the house plants and all that.
Oh, that's good.
That's what he was referring to when he mentioned my name in the speech.
Yeah. Oh, this is nice.
That drawing there is for a guide for the visitors to.
Mm-hmm. Well, when the new section was opened, there were new guests who moved in about that time too.
Yes, there've been several new ones. See, it was 63 beds originally here, and now we have 119.
Oh, that many.
Just about double capacity. You see a list there of all the names that were here on that day. And there's lots of new ones here since. Some of them I know, and some of them I never heard of before.
Mm-hmm.
They're all old-time Alaskans.
Yeah, most of them. Yeah, right. Agnes Thomas, Warren Taylor, Claire Ross, Mabel Reed, James Reed, Louis Pilbach, Catherine Jessen. Well, that's nice. I'm glad they have that. That's a good memento. Well, this picture you have from the governor up here, I noticed it's signed to Floyd Aiken. Was that just from a friend to a friend?
Well, I used to furnish flowers for his campaigns and receptions when he'd come to town.
Oh, I see.
And.
Well, he's known you for a long time then.
Yes, he gave me that in 66. He was defeated in that election.
Mm-hmm.
That's the time he gave it to me because I'd been furnishing flowers for his campaigns and for his receptions at Travelers Inn.
He's supposed to be in town tomorrow.
Is he?
Yeah, he's going to be here for the fair opens Wednesday, and he's going to be here to speak at the chamber membership luncheon at noon. They've invited the gubernatorial candidates to speak, or statewide candidates. And he's going to be there with, I think, Jay Hammond. I'm just telling you what I heard on the radio news tonight, that he would be there and Jay Hammond would be there, and I think Andy Warwick. He's running for lieutenant governor. Some statewide candidates. I'm going to go and listen.
Well, you mentioned about the governor being here on the day of the open house. Well, the entire state board, governor's advisory board of the Pioneer Homes, they were all here too. And some of Tex Taggart was here, and some of his cabinet, you know.
Yeah.
And the dining room was all set up. Ordinarily, there's six of us to a table. That day they had eight places set up at each table, and they got all arrived here just at lunchtime. And the governor and the board and all the dignitaries, they were in, and they just chose tables wherever they wanted.
Oh.
Nobody seated them.
Yeah.
Just wherever they saw somebody that they wanted to
sit with.
But it so happened that it ended up with Les Nerlin and Tex Taggart was my table, and then the governor came over and he took plate at that same table. And, and
you had a table of dignitaries.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, that's great. Well, that was nice of him to remember you, you know, in his remarks. I know you're not one to go out and seek notoriety or credit for things. You're not like that. But it's nice, you know, that people do appreciate. And he's very thoughtful like that.
Bill yes, Reagan he is.
He remembers people and remembers names and faces. And it's just gratifying.